My baby's head is so round, round as a rare and perfect piece of obsidian found on Waimanalo Beach, polished instead of flattened or fractured by the force of water. I love her round-headed perfection, my daughter's head shape so like mine and my mother's when she was a child. While I was growing up, my mother would study her daughters for signs of herself, then make pronouncements binding us to her and to our fates. To oldest sister, she would say, "Our hair is like seaweed, so black and slick, it can never hold a comb. Watch that you don't fly away." To second sister, she'd say, "You've got my dimples. Life has to pinch your cheeks hard to make you happy." My mother would tell third sister to hold out her hands, fingers pressed tightly together. "See," she would sigh, "see how the light shines through the cracks? Like me, you'll have trouble holding on to what you most want." When she would look at me, as if she was seeing both me and a memory, I knew what would come out of her mouth. "Rockhead." "Just like me," she'd say, shaking her head. "You'll have a hard life, always banging against the current. Worse than a boy, more stubborn than a stone." But she would say these things with pride, so I would know that she loved me. And every time she called me Rockhead, I'd ask her, "Why? How come? How do you know? What does it mean?" Pestering her for a story, hoping to learn more about my mother, and in turn, about the secrets of myself. At night, when my mother unwound her hair, combing through the heavy silk with her fingers, I'd press against her, close as she would let me, and wait. If I was lucky, she would notice me. "Baby girl," she might say, "pick out my white hairs." Or, "youngest daughter, massage my temples." I'd sit cross-legged on the floor and wait for my mother to lie down and slip her head into my lap. I'd stroke her forehead, the sides of her face, the top of her head where the spirit escapes at night. When she'd begin to tell her story, I'd part her hair into sections, using my nails to find and pluck the white strands. As she talked, I'd stick the oily roots onto a sheet of one of the underground papers, either the Korean Independence or the Student Revolutionary, that found its way into our village outside Busan. And after the story, after my mother fell asleep, I'd crumple the paper into a ball and burn it in the flues that warmed the underbelly of our home. As I drifted off to sleep, breathing in the scent of hair and smoke, I'd imagine that words wrapped in my mother's hair drifted into our dreams and spiraled up to heaven. I am still trying to find order in the stories my mother doled out in bits and pieces, in the hopes that in doing so, I can find significance and sanity in my own life, and so that I can warn my daughter and protect her. Because what I remember most strongly from my mother's storytelling is not something that she told me, but something that I felt. Her head was no longer round. My mother was told that the most famous fortune teller in Seoul paid to read her head at birth, said that she was the most round-headed baby she'd ever seen. In a round-headed family that valued head shape along with money and auspicious birth charts, this was the highest praise. The fortune teller predicted that because of her roundness, because of the class she was born into, and because of the sign she was born under, my mother would be very spoiled and very happy. Everything would roll her way. This was true for perhaps the first 7 years of her life. My favorite fairy tales when I was growing up were my mother's own baby time stories. When we played make pretend, my sisters and I pretended to be our mother, whose early days were filled with parties in Seoul and candy and fancy Western dresses. I pictured most of the things she told us about by finding something in my own life to compare it to and thinking, same thing, only 1,000 times better. When she told us about a doll from France with blue eyes painted in a porcelain face, I took my own pine and rag doll, put a cup over her head, and imagined a toy 1,000 times better. The one thing my mother talked about that neither my sisters nor I could imagine or comprehend was ice cream. We just had no reference for it in our lives. And when we'd push our mother for a definition, her descriptions left us even more dubious and mystified. It's like sucking on an ice-cold, perfectly ripe peach, my mother once tried to explain. Then why not just eat a peach, we asked. Because it's not the same, my mother said. That's just what it feels like in your mouth. It feels like a ripe peach and like snow and like how a cloud full of rain must feel if you could bite into it. I remember biting into my own honey and nut candy that my mother made for us during the harvest and watching her talk. She would shut her eyes, but I could still see them move back and forth under their lids. She seemed very magical, like a princess from heaven when she talked about ice cream. When I married my GI and came to Hawaii, I was surprised to see how common and how cheap ice cream was. Once I found out what it was, I bought a carton of each flavor I could find: cherry vanilla, strawberry, banana, pistachio, Neapolitan, chocolate chip, and macadamia nut. We'd have ice cream every night after dinner. At first, my husband encouraged me, glad that I was becoming American. But then he found out that I was also eating ice cream for lunch and for breakfast. And that I cried after eating a bowl of a particularly good flavor, because it reminded me that when my mother was a round-headed child princess, she took a bite out of heaven. After he found out these things, my husband put me on a diet. I try to maintain my baby's round head. I make sure her hats and headbands aren't too tight. When I shampoo her hair, I am careful that I don't use too much pressure and leave unintentional dents. I make sure she sleeps on her stomach so her skull won't flatten out in the back. And I maintain a constant vigilance, checking on her throughout the night so that I can catch her when she flips over. This is hard work, and I do it in secret because I do not want to hear my husband talk about God and genetics. I know better because of my mother than to think that head shape is fixed for life. In the years before her head changed, my mother's father was a middle school official. He was the one who gave my mother her doll from France, fancy dresses, and a taste for ice cream. He was also the one who taught her her lessons, drilling her in math and history. Because of him, my mother wanted to be the best girl student in the primary school. I studied, my mother would say, so I could be the best. But every time we took the tests, I always placed second. Number one was always my best friend, who I hated at that time of year. Every year, she said, I wished to be number one. One year, though, I figured out that my wishing it wasn't enough to make it happen, because my best friend was also wishing to be number one. Her wish was blocking my wish. So that year, when it came time to write our wishes on the paper we would burn and send to heaven, I told my best friend she should wish to be the prettiest girl, since she was already the smartest. When she said, okay, and I saw her write this down, I snuck away and wrote on my own paper, "I wish to be number one in school." My mother would always become sad at this point in the story, and when my sisters and I asked if she got her wish, she'd always say, "Yes, and I'm sorry." The year my mother's wish came true was the year Japan invaded Korea, the year her father and his colleagues were taken away, the year that her best friend had to drop out of school because her family could not afford to pay the education fee demanded by the new Japanese provisional government. My mother had to learn a new alphabet and new words for everyday things. She had to learn to answer to a new name, to think of herself and her world in a new way, to hide her secret self. These are the things my mother taught me, and these are the things that have enabled me to survive in this new country. Because of my mother's early lessons, I can eat cracked seed without making a face or spitting. I can look up at the shop boy at Woolworths who says, "What you like, lady?" and hide my fear. And I can smile when everyone talks too fast with words that make no sense, when all I really want to do is scream and scream and never stop. This is the way my mother also survived. But she paid a price. I think this, the way my mother hid herself, the way her lived life deviated from the person she was born to be, is what changed the shape of her head. In Korea, the elders warned those of us haunting the American PX for work or handouts about mixing our blood with the foreigners. Though nothing specific was said, my girlfriends and I imagined that big-nosed, blue- and blind-eyed monsters would sprout from our wombs if we mated with the Americans. Still, that did not stop us from going where the money and food was. I know I was willing to risk anything because I was hungry, even marrying a foreigner and leaving my home country. When I became pregnant, I could not help worrying about what my baby would look like, wondering if she would be a monster or human, Korean or other, me or not me. Even walking the streets of Honolulu, seeing for my own eyes the normal-looking chop suey children, I could not stifle the voices of the village elders whispering, "Monsters. Monsters." Now, as I look at my daughter, I do not know how I could have doubted her perfection. Her hair is reddish brown, not black. Her eyes, though brown, are cut differently than mine. But her head is round. I cup her tiny head in my palms and whisper, "I am so proud of you. You are a rockhead, like your mother and your mother's mother. Only 1,000 times better."